Beckham now to Owen, and here's another Owen run. He's going to worry them again. It's a great run by Michael Owen, and he might finish it off. Oh, it's a wonderful goal! What an amazing moment in Michael Owen's young career. A fantastic run that frightened the Argentinians, and a most unerring finish beyond Roa to make it 2-1 England. A terrific moment.
Welcome, welcome to the Three Beards World Cup podcast preview for Group G. We have brought back the legend, Ken Lee. How are we doing, Ken?
I'm back, baby. I couldn't miss the English group.
Yes, that's true. Ken Lee of Arsenal fandom. I am Tom Miller, and we are going to walk you through our newest team. We're bandwagon England fans.
If there was ever such a thing.
Yeah.
Me and you, Tom, we're driving the bandwagon of U.S. national English fans.
And I guess what we have to ask ourselves, Ken, is the question that James asked a little earlier in one of the previous episodes, why would we do this to ourselves?
We're already U.S. national fans. It only makes sense to go directly to England. I mean, even if we didn't support the Premier League, wouldn't you just gravitate to England anyway?
I do. Honestly, I do. I always fill out two brackets, and one bracket will be like a logical bracket, having Germany win or something like that. And then there's always a second bracket, Ken, and it's always England winning. We will see, because it is my duty to convince you, Ken Lee, that England is going to win the World Cup.
The only thing they might win, and that's if they show up, is this group. Maybe.
Okay. So I'm going to spend the rest of this episode convincing you why I think that England has a shot.
Winning the whole thing?
Yes, I am. I'm going to do that.
Okay, fine.
And I know that you're a sucker because you're an Arsenal fan. And every year, you talk yourselves into Arsenal.
Well, I know that you're delusional because you're a Manchester United fan.
That's fine. That's fine. We're going to get right into the group. We have Group G, England. And as usual with these previews, Ken, we go over the betting odds on each team to win it all because I think that's a good indicator.
Which I still don't fully understand betting odds, but that's neither here nor there, I guess.
I think it's pretty simple. It's you got your odds for whether or not they're going to win the World Cup, and that's, you know, you rank it against everyone else's odds, and it gives you a general idea of where they stand. Of course, odds also take into account the groups and where they will exit the groups and who they play next and things like that. But I like the idea that Vegas knows a lot more than ESPN.
Well, I mean, the house never loses. It's putting up a lot of money, so.
Exactly why I would choose Vegas to be the beginning point of all of our comparisons between
these
teams.
All right, so what's Vegas saying, Thomas?
16-1. That puts them in the 8-10 range.
Is that 16-1 to win the group or win the World Cup?
To win the World Cup.
England 16-1.
England 16-1, and I'll tell you why.
It's not terrible.
It's not. It's not terrible. They're the winners of Euro Group F over Slovakia, Slovenia, and Scotland. And, Ken, they're unbeaten in qualifying as they have been for their last 39 qualifying matches.
And you know what? Positivity will ring true here.
And
this year alone, I will say I would like nothing more than England to win the World Cup.
Absolutely. And another thing.
How cool would that be?
Another thing, Ken. This is a different year from other years, I say as we convince ourselves. You know, previous generations have had David Beckham, World Player of the Year candidate, Steven Gerrard, World Player of the Year candidate, Frank Lampard, Rio Ferdinand, John Terry, Wayne Rooney, Michael Owen, and they always fell short with these golden generations of players with Paul Scholes. And I like the identity of this team, Ken, and that is what we're going to spend a lot of our time on. First, we're going to start with some of the negative and the noise that surrounds the English national team. The infamous noise from David Beckham kicking out and receiving a ticky-tacky red card in 1998 to Wayne Rooney stomping on someone's balls in 2006 in a Portuguese match. to Fabio Capello to Sam Allardyce is where we're going to start in this one. Ken, Sam Allardyce took over and everything seemed honky-dory for the big guy.
Who doesn't love Big Sam?
Who doesn't love... Well, I think every Everton fan doesn't love Big Sam. Big Sam started out all right. He got his win and then he fell... Should we say fell victim to the media? I don't know. It's like he did it himself. He did everything they said he did.
I almost feel like, though, any manager of the English national team is just going to fall victim eventually to the journos of England.
Yeah.
Like, it's just terrible. Like, they can't give anyone a break. Like, the first sign of anything negative, and it's a wrap for them. Like, it is done.
They are trying right now, as we speak, writing up different kinds of reports about Raz Sterling, which we'll get into. But let's start with the Sam Allardyce one. Essentially, he took over his dream job as a... What do you think? He's a journeyman Premier League manager who specialized in keeping clubs from getting relegated for the layperson.
Yeah, he does a job. He's good. Everyone has a lane. Sam Allardyce sticks in his lane. He keeps Premier League clubs in the Premier League. And if Everton fans have a problem with what Sam Allardyce did this season, I mean, they got a big problem with every manager they've had before, if you want to be honest.
Keep him out of relegation. They actually finished in the
top 10.
Table.
Yeah. They finished in the top 10. What, one place away from where they finished last season with their godsend manager?
Yeah.
Ronald Koeman? I mean, come on. I mean, he did great.
Sam.
He did great.
Big Sam, big ego, big head. But so basically what happened was he got on a boat with what he thought was an oil shake, and it ended up being an undercover journo, and they basically asked him a bunch of inflammatory questions about topics that were ranging from, you know, transfer fees to how to get around third-party ownership rules.
Well, you know, I mean, you put a couple of drinks in Big Sam and all bets are off.
No, I'm just trying to think of what topics they would have to go through to get Ken Lee in trouble. You know, would it have to be something?
Not many. Maybe like two questions in.
Three sips.
Brew and a half. Be respectful, Thomas. Be respectful.
Well, anyway, so he was ousted after that. You know, the English FA stepped out on their high horse and said, we don't agree with the way he says these things. He's not representing us. And
we all know how that ended up.
Yeah. In steps Gareth Southgate. And he's kind of a, you know, he's like the English FA's man. You know, he's like a soft-spoken guy. He's been ahead of their under-23s program and is just a guy that, you know, played in the Premier League, managed for Middlesbrough. And seems to be a company man. That's a good way to describe it. He's
a company man. Yep.
Yeah, so he was a good appointment for them. And one of the things I really like about Southgate is how calming he's been on the entire squad. You know, they very quietly and industriously qualified for the World Cup with games to spare.
True.
And undefeated for 39 matches, not all of them under him, but undefeated in qualifying. And you can say whatever you want about any one of their players, but there are other teams with higher World Cup pedigrees that did not make the World Cup.
True. USA being one of them.
Well, no, they don't have the USA absolutely doesn't have a higher pedigree, but the Netherlands and Italy, I'm looking at you.
Yeah, seriously. I mean, hey, he's done his job. I mean, you get into the World Cup, go on. I mean, qualifying for the World Cup, you have one job, qualify.
Yeah.
You qualified. And let's be honest, I mean, nobody would have even really batted an eye if England missed the World Cup. It would have just been one of those things where, like, well, I mean, it was always in the cards, you know?
Yeah, actually, and this year, probably more than any other year in the last, I don't know, maybe even 20, 30 years, the squad doesn't have those, you know, superstar players. And you have Harry Kane, of course.
Well, I mean, when you get Harry Kane, Stones, Walker, Pickford. I mean, they're all players that are on, you know, besides Pickford's on Everton, but Kane and the other that I just mentioned are on the best teams in the league.
They are.
And we always tout it as the best leagues as in the world.
Those players aren't being linked with Real Madrid with the exception of
Harry
Kane. Yeah, Harry Kane is. That's what I'm saying. Harry Kane is the one big name in this team. But at the same time...
Wasn't Sterling... Sterling's, like, linked with somebody.
I mean,
he plays on Man City.
But... He's on Man City. I don't hear him being linked with anybody. But he had a stellar season. The point is, you don't have that kind of hubbub where it's like, oh, but we have Gerrard and Lampard and Rooney and Rio Ferdinand
and 40 other guys. I do Jamie hear what Carragher. You're saying. Yeah, yeah. No, I'm with that argument. I'm not against it. I'm with it.
I like it. It's like they have a young squad, youngish squad of players that are between, you know, 22 and 26, and they almost don't know any better. You know what I mean? No, I mean, I'm being serious.
Maybe that's true. Maybe they'll go with the innocent mindset of, you know, the little baby who doesn't know that it's really hard to walk and you can't tell him that it's impossible, so he tries until he knows how to walk.
Yeah, and I also think that it gives them a little bit of leeway. So if one of these players, with the exception of Harry Kane and Dele Alli, he gets a ton of guff, or if John Stones, honestly, he could get it too. But a lot of these players, you know, if Kieran Trippier has a tough game, you think they're going to tear him apart?
Oh, probably not.
I mean, they'll tear him apart, but it won't be like David Beckham where they're sending death threats.
No, that's true. I mean, yeah, you could be right. Maybe they're going into this World Cup 2018, Russia, with absolutely nothing to lose.
Yeah.
The other squads really did. I mean, like, to your argument, they were being touted at the time by the best clubs in the world. Like, if they performed during the World Cup, I mean, and a lot of them ended up moving on anyway, but, you know, these English players who just, you know, come out as touted as the best thing since sliced bread, we don't really. I mean, England doesn't have any players being really tapped for the best clubs in the world, except for Kane and recently Pickford to Bayern Munich.
I saw that. That would be shocking to me, and it would be as a reserve, so I wouldn't like that move for him. But anyway, Southgate coming in and calming the waters and setting humble expectations, really taking the focus off the team and kind of protecting the players with his demeanor and with the results, quite frankly.
Well, it's easy to protect your players when you're winning.
Yeah, that's very true. English... biggest issue has always been their mentality, as they've wasted several generations of the world's best, quote-unquote. And both you and I are in love with those generations.
Did you see what, I believe it was, and we'll have to fact check later. So, I believe, though, it was Rio Ferdinand in an interview a couple weeks ago, maybe like a month ago. He was saying that England's national squad, their best years was wasted on Premier League rivalries.
Oh, yeah, I read that, yeah.
About how, you know, when they would get together to play for the national team, like, that was at, like, the heart and the actual time of the United-Liverpool rivalry, where, like, you had the best players on United and Liverpool playing for the national team, and when they got to play for the national team, they weren't really willing to give it all they had because they didn't want people to take it back to the locker room of their prospective club. It's like they were almost distracted to play at their best for the betterment of their club. Like, you believe any of that? I mean, I necessarily don't, but...
Yeah, I believe it for sure, but the counter-argument to that's pretty simple. Spain is made of Real Madrid and Barcelona and Atletico Madrid. Those are three rivals.
Yeah.
And
the only three clubs in that league, by the way, for the last, like, 100 years.
Yeah, and I mean, those players can get together just fine when they have more heated rivalries a lot of the time because they're playing for the title,
right? Most of the time, they're the only two clubs in the league.
Yeah, so I that would be my response to that, Rio Ferdinand.
No, like, I wasn't really buying that when I heard it. That's just what he was saying. I think it's almost like where we have to listen in America. We have to listen to the soccer games where you have Lexi Lawless talk about how great his generation was, and we've made it further ever since without him besides this year. Like, I just think that people get stuck in their own generation where, like, it will never be better than when I played.
Yeah, that's very true, especially with old players talking. I mean, love Rio Ferdinand as a Manchester United fan, but, I mean, the bottom line is they got dumped out a bunch of times in heartbreaking fashion. That's always been a part of the
epic
English history
fashion,
story.
Yeah, jeez.
I mean, we talked about it. We're talking about 1986, Maradona versus England. Maradona, of course, the height of his powers. Hand of God goal, Ken. Changes everything. Changes everything. And then he goes and scores a goal that makes it a moot point as he dribbles through the entire team and knocks him out. 1990, Ken. They lost in PKs in the semifinals. Did not qualify in 1994. And Beckham picked up a red card in 1998, as we alluded to before. They lost in PKs in that game. Seaman beaten by Ronaldinho's free kick in 0-2 that Ronaldinho swears he was shooting, Ken, but I don't know anybody
who shoots
from 45 yards out with, like, balloons of ball. But, yeah, I mean, I'm not saying it's not a thing. The guy did win a couple World Player of the Years. But
it was epic, though.
PKs to Portugal in 06. And, I mean, honestly, they've averaged about the quarterfinals until 2006. And then they got their most talented teams probably ever, and they actually got worse.
Simon, I have to agree. The statistics and the way in which they epically bowed out of every tournament since then is, well, we'll tell you that that's the truth.
Yep, they picked up 1 point in 2014 and 5 points in 2010. I mean, we know the history, Ken, and...
Well, I'm telling you this, Thomas. They don't make it out of this group, Panama, Tunisia, Belgium. We're going to have a podcast that decides if we're even Premier League fans.
You said that earlier.
I'm telling you. Like, there's no way. There's no way. There's no way that it happens. Like, they should really win this group. But I will give Belgium the benefit of the doubt and say that, you know, they have a team that puts it together more. But, I mean, let's be honest here. England. Well, we'll call England we from now on. Okay. We should be winning this group.
I think we can win the group. I can't believe you got me saying we. I think we can win the group.
Well,
I just...
You know, if we're not fans, like, what's the point of watching?
Yeah, I know. I'm behind it. I got my jersey out. Dr. Pete went and got a Harry Kane England jersey. That's a real commitment there.
I might have to go get an England jersey.
You should. They're good looking. They look good.
They're good looking.
They're good looking. So I think that Gareth Southgate is trying to change the mentality by just limiting expectations, calming everything down, and trying to protect the team from the press as it tries to come in. I mean, you had this story that they just came up with Raz Sterling. He had a tattoo. We're not going to get too far into it, but essentially it's a case of an overzealous newspaper going into battle with a player, trying to pick a player out, trying to start controversy, and then even when they were dead wrong and his reasons for his tattoo, etc., were completely different from what they thought, they didn't back down from that either. And the next story that came out, Raz actually had showed up late for camp due to flight issues, and he apologized to the whole team, but they're trying to make that their story because there isn't a story yet.
I just don't understand why the English media is so pressed. They're so hell-bent on getting into the player's head. Like, you would think that other countries will be doing this. Why are we doing this to ourselves? Why is the media doing this to their own players? You should be, like, trying to calm them in the manner that Southgate is calming them. Like, keeping things away from them, only talking about positive things. Why are we talking? Like, I've never heard one positive thing about the English national team. Never in my life have I heard anything positive. And it all comes from England. Why is that? It's so weird. I would love to hear, like, someone that lives in England and has been there their whole lives. Like, what is the meaning behind that? Is that just the way of life there? I don't understand that. I don't get it. Like, you don't hear that in the United States. Like, we'll get behind any athlete from any state, any team, if they're the best.
Yeah, that's true.
It's just frustrating to me. Like, why can't we just let these guys live? Let these guys figure it out, get past this tournament. Let's see how far they go without you guys being so negative that they can't even play anymore because you put so much pressure on them.
Yeah, and I've seen some counter stories from, like, Football 365. They're an online magazine that keeps track of the media and calls the media out for what they are. And recently they've written a story that just says how to get over the mental hurdle of cheering for England. And it's not a piece where it's like, well, we're going to lose. You know, we joked about that at the beginning of the show. It's more like, this is the World Cup. Not every team is going to win, and they are 16-1. They're not 5-1.
Why can't we start cheering for England to win?
Yeah, root for them. Be the difference. And as a country, get behind it. But with the ravenous media over there, I mean, they're always going to be looking for a story. You'll see some stories come out 3 days before that are, you know.
Oh, yeah, even worse than this.
Yeah.
Even, like, worsely falsified than this one already is.
Yeah. So let's get into the actual match play. We have the starting 11, which is played against Nigeria, with three in the back and two wingbacks. Pickford in goal. How do you feel about Pickford in goal?
I love anyone other
than Joe
Hart. Anyone.
Yeah, you called that pretty early.
I love Pickford in goal. I mean, he's the best option we have, except for what, Butlin? I think was the other one.
Yeah.
Jack Butlin. I think Pickford's the best choice between the two. Jack Butlin might maybe even be better because he dealt with the most shots of any goalie in the league.
Being on a bad team doesn't necessarily make you better.
No, it doesn't, but I mean, he might be more ready. But I think Pickford is the best choice.
Yeah, I agree.
Young, ready to go, needs to prove something. And now, maybe if anything, like this link to Bayern Munich might even make him play better. Who knows?
It might. I think that he's got a good mentality from what I've seen, too. I mean, you never hear anything from him in the press.
Exactly.
Even though Everton was getting drubbed. And he had that move to Everton that was supposed to be a dream move for him. And, you know, it didn't work out the way he thought initially. And I think he played well enough. And I don't want to jinx him, but
exactly.
I believe that he has sure hands. And I like the pick as well.
Love it.
So let's move to the center backs, which you won't love as much.
Nope.
They played Walker, Stones, and Cahill as their center backs.
Yeah. I mean, what are you going to do, though? Who else are you going to put in there?
Phil Jones.
Oh, my God. Give me a break. Give me a break, Manchester United. Phil Jones is terrible.
He's not terrible.
He's terrible.
He's not terrible.
He is god-awful, and you know that.
He's a good tackler.
You cannot let your delusionality of Manchester United fandom cloud your judgment that Phil Jones is not a terrible defender. He is bad. And you know that. You know that he is.
But is he worse than Cahill, who didn't even play hardly at all for Chelsea this year and is old and got exposed by Iceland in the Euros? And Kyle Walker, who is a outside back.
Well, I don't like the fact that Kyle Walker is playing in a back three. I do not like that, but yeah, maybe they're looking to use some speed on a counter or something.
I mean, yeah,
but I mean, that
don't
does leave you with two in the back at that point. I mean, that's pretty crazy, but I still don't think Phil Jones.
All right, fair enough. So basically what they're saying is they want to go with the experience of Cahill, and they want to go with the
attacking nature of Walker.
Yes. And then you have the finesse of Stones. Stones, to me, I think he's okay for this group. I worry about Stones against Lukaku.
Yeah.
Because Stones, he's not a very strong
center
back.
You'll only worry about Stones because England does not have the attacking wherewithal that Manchester City has. And I will say this to the death. I do not think that City's defenders were challenged enough throughout the season to really have any one of those defenders prepared to play for their national team in the World Cup. So to rely on Stones back there, that's a little negative for me, but, you know, we'll see what happens.
Yeah, you have to say, to counter our point about each individual player's weaknesses, that there are three of them, and if they can get the formation right, if they can get
true.
The movement right,
that's true.
They have a good chance, especially, I mean, you're looking at the Belgium game with Lukaku up front. Can they pass him off? Cahill's a good matchup for Lukaku. Walker and Stones, not as much, especially Stones. It's a real
it's
mismatch.
It's blocking passing lanes is all. If they can play calmly, efficiently, and they can play defensive-minded and not get out of whack, then yeah, it's a wrap. Those defenders are tactfully sound enough to do that. It's just keeping cool heads about them during the one game they have to be tactically aware.
Yeah.
Because the other two teams, if you don't beat them, I'm telling you, we're going to have issues.
Yeah, I'm interested to see if they switch their formation for the Belgium game because the 3-5-2 that they were kind of playing, the offset, you have to say that you would imagine that it's possible Trippier and Young probably won't play at the same time, and maybe you'll have either Young and Walker or Trippier and Walker,
right,
and then more of a normal 4-4-2, whereas maybe that 3-5-1 or whatever they want to call it. 3-5-1-1.
It'll be interesting to see for sure. But there's lots of things they can do with this type of lineup. They can easily mess with the schematics of the squad.
Yeah, and that goes to Gareth Southgate again in his selection process. I can't believe that Ashley Young is as strong of a candidate as he is to be a good player, and especially against a weak team where he can get a lot of crosses in.
Exactly.
And Trippier is the same, an excellent crosser. I think that those two will be really, really big when it comes to playing against Panama and Tunisia. And I think that for the first time, I think England is preparing themselves to play the best way they possibly can as a team, as opposed to trying to fit Steven Gerrard and Frank Lampard.
That's all you
Lampard
can ask.
In.
You play the best with the people you have available that can play the best in the position that they're paid to play. That's the best you can ask for, and I think that Southgate has given us that. And
yeah,
it makes me confident.
I like it. So moving forward in the formation, we have Dyer underneath, probably going to play a defensive midfield position. Sure. Better that than having him at center back or right back, right?
Yep.
He'll be the water carrier. I'm not a big Jordan Henderson fan. I can see his role against the weaker teams where he doesn't have to do anything dynamic. He can spray the ball out wide, but I like Dyer overall, just having a defender sit in front of those center backs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, same.
Moving forward, we have Lingard and Dele Alli. I don't know how they're going to play together, but I like both Ali, players. But yeah, it's interesting you said that instead of Lingard, because if I had asked you 2 years ago, you know, what do you think of Jesse Lingard playing in the World Cup in 2018?
I just wasn't impressed by Alli this season. I mean, by and large, I wasn't impressed by Lingard either, but I just feel like Alli coming off, you know, that crazy season he had, and then basically just not showing up until
he showed up in the second half.
The last couple of games of the season, let's be honest. The last couple of games of the season.
He was pretty good after January. He had a lot of assists.
Maybe he just shows up when he needs to, and maybe he's ready to go now for the World Cup. I mean, I'm not against Alli being on the team. Of course he's on the team. I'm not against him starting.
Mm-hmm.
I just, you know, I have reservations about him. I just think that we shouldn't be too against potentially pulling him game two if he doesn't show up game one.
Yeah, I don't think that would happen. I think that he'll do enough, but yeah, he can go anonymous sometimes, and that's what I'm saying. The movement between Lingard and Alli is really, really important to get forward in the group, because both those guys are going to be dynamic, and once again, it comes down to beating out Tunisia and beating out Panama, two teams that we will talk about, but you are heavily favored against.
Yeah, I like having Alli and Kane. I mean, that should count for something. They played together all year long. It should be, you know, business as usual, you know, as they say.
Yeah, so again, moving forward, you have Raheem Sterling and Harry Kane at the nine. Sterling probably going to play a left wing role where he cuts in.
Yeah.
Can also play on the right wing. Obviously a superb dribbler who is extremely good at getting brought down for penalty kicks and not necessarily diving, just putting himself in a position where he can be fouled.
Exactly. Use that to our advantage. Win a World Cup off of that. I'd love it.
I would put money on Raz Sterling winning a penalty kick in this tournament. Oh, I absolutely would, especially for sure. Against Panama.
For sure.
I would put that down. And then leading the line, Ken, Harry Kane, Tottenham zone, possibly Real Madrid zone after this World Cup, but, you know, a lot of pressure on Harry Kane, and maybe most importantly, beyond the fact that he is a brilliant finisher, not just from 12 yards out, but he can score from 20 yards out, he can score with his head, score with both feet. Really, he has to stay healthy, and he hasn't had a lot of health problems in his career, but if he goes down, this English team is in trouble.
Oh, I would say if any one of these 11 players go down, England is in trouble. I wouldn't say that our strong point is depth, for sure, especially if the one that goes down is a Kane. But yeah, I mean, Kane is super dynamic. He's ready to go. He's got winning mentality,
mm-hmm.
And he's shown that at Tottenham. You know, when Alli doesn't show up for ages, basically, you know, they're still putting up results because of Kane. Like, Kane will make something out of nothing.
He can score a goal out of anything. Exactly. And
I think that he's going to bring a lot to the English squad. And I think that he's going to be something to watch. And for, if not for only 4 weeks of my life, I will be supporting Harry Kane.
That's fine. As an Arsenal fan, I understand. Let me ask you this. If Harry Kane goes down,
yeah,
I mean, what do you do? Because let's look at the bench a little bit here. The forwards they have, I love Jamie Vardy. I think Jamie Vardy is the best substitute to come Vardy off the bench slides in. For any team. If you,
any country, I believe, any country that has a puncher's chance of winning the World Cup or making another group would love to have a Jamie Vardy on the bench. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, coming off the bench, absolutely.
Dude, I mean, what more could you ask for? I mean, not many people are dealing with, you know, the depth of a Spanish roster or a German roster. So when you think of like a Jamie Vardy on the bench, that's unbelievable.
Yeah, with his speed and his ability to finish, his conversion rate is through the roof. You talk about a guy you can bring on in the 70th minute when you're down 1-0. I would be
semi-concerned if we had to start Jamie Vardy. Semi-concerned. And that's only because it's not Harry Kane.
I agree completely with that. I would be concerned more in that Jamie Vardy doesn't help the guys underneath him as much off the, you know, in the run of play, like Dele Alli and Lingard.
I mean, I don't see Kane like going in there to tackle.
I'm not talking about tackles. I'm talking about, you know, interchanging passes and things like that.
Oh yeah, sure. Jamie Vardy is strictly off of the counter. He's strictly counter-attacking striker. There's no question about that. Like, you just have to change the formation, change the tactic, and I mean, it can work out.
Yeah. So also coming off the bench, we have Danny Welbeck, and I'm on record with saying that I think Danny Welbeck's extremely poor finishing rate is something that
still good to have on the bench, Thomas, and you know it.
The only thing that makes it good to have on the bench is the fact that he can do the opposite of Jamie Vardy, which is he's very good in the run of play, but I don't want a player on my team that can't finish in the nine.
But he's a box-to-box striker.
Is he a striker, though? He doesn't finish.
He can finish.
Can he, though?
He can finish.
Can he, though?
I mean, he's not really given the opportunity to play an out-and-out striking role. Don't be a jerk,
dude, he's
Thomas.
Been playing for so long, and his
but never, rate like, of never scoring. In an out-and-out striking role. There's always another striker on the pitch. Always.
The guy is always in the final third.
Yeah, but he never plays the striking position. He's always coming in from the wing.
What good's a guy who's in the final third if he can't score?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I agree to disagree. I mean, I think that he brings value for sure. And that's not just because he plays for Arsenal. I thought he brought value at United, too. Anyone who plays attacking, honestly, that will go box to box and play old school reminiscent Wayne Rooney football, I'm a fan of.
I don't know if I can put Danny Welbeck and Wayne Rooney in the same category.
I'm not saying that they finish the same way, but he plays defense like Wayne Rooney played defense as a striker. I mean, that's pretty valuable.
There is some value to that. Moving on to a Manchester United player, you have Rashford coming off the bench. Rashford, up and down year for sure. Honestly,
that was more mouse fault than anything else.
Yeah, Mourinho, you know, he wants a certain type of player in every single position. If you're not that player, he doesn't really tailor the position around you.
Well, he basically wants you to play defense no matter what position you play. And if you don't, you don't play.
Yeah, and so you still have the dynamism of Rashford, and I believe he'll start a match in the group stages. I think it'll be against one of the weaker teams when you can have a player who will get a lot of one-on-one opportunities, and I think that he'll do well in that role. You just don't want to expand it too far because he is very young.
Yeah, no, definitely.
So off the bench also, we have Ruben Loftus-Cheek. I don't know how he made the squad.
Yeah, me either, honestly. I mean, but I guess maybe you're just hoping you might not need to use him.
Yeah, I guess that's what it's for. Danny Rose coming off the bench and Fabian Delph making the squad. I thought that was really interesting that Fabian Delph made it. Basically, when he got converted to playing outside back.
Yeah, and when you play as much of a role as you played for the best team in England this season, I mean, you're going to make the squad.
Talk about playing. I mean, Adam Lallana hardly played at all this year for Liverpool, and he's in the squad because they don't have anybody else who offers that skill set.
That's true. I mean, I just think that anything outside of the starting 11 plus two or three players, honestly, as an English fan, you're just hoping that they don't need to be used.
Agree completely. So we'll get to the idea of whether or not they will finish ahead in the group, but let's go through their history briefly. Qualified for 15 of 21 World Cups, did not enter from 1930 to 38. We've gone over all the things that went wrong for them, but in 1966, Ken, they did win a World Cup while hosting.
Yeah. 66, baby. Never forget.
Their historic player from that 66 team is Sir Bobby Charlton, Manchester United fan, obviously. Played in 58, but didn't kick the ball, so basically he was on the roster. But he played against Pele in 62. They lost there. Beat Franz Beckenbauer in 1966. Lost to Franz Beckenbauer in 1970 before being subbed off for his last ever appearance. He also won the Ballon d'Or that year. 4 goals in 14 World Cup matches and 49 goals in 106 international appearances. Last mention of England, Gary Lineker, 10 goals in 12 World Cup. Do you think Harry Kane can score 10 goals in this World Cup, Ken Lee?
I mean, I think he's got to hit them for sure.
That's right. That's what I think, too. That's what I think, too.
We'll see. But, I mean, if anyone's got it in them to score, what, 14 goals, 10 goals? It's Harry Kane.
It's been done. Juice Fontaine. Been done.
He can go on a tear.
That's right. So 10 goals, you heard it here first. Go to your bookie and take care of it. Let's move on to the actual favorites for the group. Belgium, 10-1 and winners of Euro Group H over Greece and Bosnia-Herzegovina. They're 9 of 10 wins scored, 43 goals in qualifying, and they are stacked.
Is it too soon? Who isn't happy that Vincent Kompany's injured? This guy's happy.
Well, you are the biggest England fan out there, so I can understand that completely. Their manager is Roberto Martinez, formerly of Everton. Their best player is an argument. Probably Kevin De Bruyne. What do you think?
It's Eden
Hazard, De Bruyne?
Definitely Kevin De Bruyne. They have a Hazard. They have a Lukaku.
Two Hazards.
Potentially, they have a company. I mean, they got a stacked team for sure. But
they do.
Doesn't matter. Like we said, England's not only going to win this group, they're going to win the World Cup.
Fact. Player to watch, Eden Hazard. The narrative, basically, they finally put it together with their colossal qualifying campaign. They're relatively healthy and supremely talented with Lukaku, KDB, Hazard, and Martins up top. And then Vertonghen, Otterwereld, and Kompany in the back. If Kompany's playing, they still have Vertonghen and Otterwereld.
It's still too much. I'm just saying, like, an injury is an injury. You know, let's take the positives.
Yes, they have Courtois in goal as well, Ken. I mean, you can put him in the best player talk as well.
No, that's it. Look, are the odds against us in England? Yes, to win this group, of course they are.
Yeah, they're against us for sure.
Let's go for it.
They're against us.
Let's believe that England will win this group and take that momentum in and win that World Cup.
Fair enough. Can this team gel with so many playmakers in so many different systems? That's the question, and that's why they're not favored to win the World Cup with their stacked squad. I mean, they also allowed 3 goals to Mexico in a friendly. It's just a friendly, Ken. But Kevin De Bruyne, very upset after that, talking about the defensive structure. And they also allowed 3 goals to Bosnia and Herzegovina in a qualifying match. So, I mean, there's some frailty there for us to expose.
Yep, we can do it. We can do it.
We can do it. We can. That can be the motto for the English national team. The press can get behind it.
We can do it.
We can do it. The history of Belgium, they've qualified for 13 of 21 World Cups. Finished 4th in 1986, 6th in 2014. Their average finish is about 10th place, which is pretty good. And their historic player is Jean-Marie Pfaff, a goalkeeper from Bayern Munich. Now, I looked through a lot of their historic players, but I have to say that this is their golden generation here. And it's very possible that if one of these players, Kevin De Bruyne, Hazard especially, steps up, they could really become the best players in Belgian history.
No question. They might already be.
They might already be, but you have to do something, too. You have to have a good run in a tournament. 4th place, for instance.
True, but that's saying that you put like a lot of focus on international play. I mean, it's arguable that what Kevin De Bruyne is doing at Manchester City right now makes him the best player to ever come out of Belgium.
And yeah, that's true.
If you got a problem with that, I mean, just watch him play. I mean, you can't put a lot of pressure on someone playing for a national team. Like, just because you're from that country doesn't mean you play with those players every week.
Yeah.
A lot of these countries outside of Germany and Spain only play with this team on friendlies in every 4 years. It does not make them the best players in the world and the best players that come from that country.
I agree. We talked about Messi and Ronaldo in the same kind of frame.
Yeah, you're going to tell me that Ronaldo is not the best player ever to come out of Portugal?
No, I will not tell you that. He is.
Exactly. You will never say that. And they don't have a World Cup.
Very true.
Under Ronaldo.
Last thing about Belgium. What do you think... Where do you think Marouane Fellaini fits in the best ever players from Belgium? And just in general.
I mean... Could you... Top 15.
He's rumored to Arsenal. Did you see that?
Top 15. Honestly, I'd take him.
Yeah, I could talk you into anybody right now.
Not that I could take him into anyone. I mean, you couldn't talk me into anyone, but Fellaini, I mean, I've always told you this before. He plays a position at Manchester United. I think United would be silly to get rid of him. There's no way that United is paying him to be there.
I don't want to get rid of him.
What I'm saying is, he's a good bench player. Like, yeah. He's not a starter by any means. No way. Not on any club. I would say he's not a starter on any club in the Premier League. But he has a role that he plays at all 20 clubs in the Premier League.
I think he could start below the top six, well, but I see what you're saying.
Okay, you know what I'm saying, Thomas.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. So, Ken, I'm going to let you go and finish up Panama and Tunisia here. Anything else you want to add about your English national team?
It's our English national team. And for everyone out there listening, it's our English national team. If they're ever going to win this year, it's going to be this year, because I fully believe that my country, the United States of America, will be back in that World Cup in 4 years. And I can't root for you at that point.
Nope.
You have the American backing right now, England. Take it or leave it. But you should win the World Cup in 2018 in Russia. It's our time. It's your time. It's our time. It's everybody's time. Let's do it.
Take advantage of having Ken and Tom on your side. All right, Ken. I'm going to let you go and finish up with Panama and Tunisia here. We will talk again when the matches start, Ken. And England forever, ?
England. Hashtag England forever.
Hashtag English
parentheses forever. 2018.
All right.
I'll talk to you later.
On to Panama. 1,000-1 betting odds. They qualified third from CONCACAF ahead of the U.S. and Honduras. This is one of the teams that beat out the U.S. on the last day of qualifying, as the U.S. fell to Trinidad and Tobago, which was absolutely brutal to all of us. Just embarrassing across the board, especially when you take a look at Panama's roster. The manager is Hernan Dario Gomez, and they call him the Baton. I don't know how you earn a nickname as the Baton, but, you know, I'm not going to ask questions. I don't have any cool nicknames like that, none that are radio appropriate anyway. And he actually has brought them to a World Cup, which is saying something. They've never qualified for a World Cup. Their best player is Gabriel Gomez of Atletico Bucaramanga, and their player to watch is Roman Torres, the center back from the Seattle Sounders, who actually put them in the World Cup with a towering header. I mean, it's embarrassing to say, but a lot of the teams from CONCACAF have the same percentage of players from the MLS that the United States national team does now, and their players played better in qualifying, which is what left the U.S. out in the first place. You have a squad of players for the United States who came in. They make the most money. They're the big ticket signings. They were previously in Europe, usually in pretty decent roles. Michael Bradley at Roma, Clint Dempsey at Fulham, and then Tottenham. I mean, Clint Dempsey was getting older, so I didn't really have a problem with him moving. But I did have a problem with Michael Bradley moving when he was 27 because he didn't like scrapping with the other Roma midfielders, the other Sampdoria midfielders, and wanted to play all the time and in a league that was weaker than a Champions League squad. So, I mean, that was very disappointing to all of us. You have Jozy Altidore, who made it big in the Dutch league, scored 30 goals there, made a move to Sunderland, and basically fell apart in the Premier League. I think he scored 2 goals in 32 matches. He moved to the MLS when he was about 27, 28. And as you saw in his qualifying, he actually, his skills eroded to the point where he's slower on the ball. He'll still finish occasionally, but all these players that came back from Europe basically got a lot worse. And it showed in their qualifying campaign, and now there's a big upheaval in the United States about whether or not they should play again. And like we said before, they're definitely in the top 25 of players in the United States, but it's whether or not you want that kind of mentality that I don't want to move forward with my career. I'm just looking to come back and be comfortable. And that's something that most United States fans are pretty upset about. Back to Panama. They've never qualified for a World Cup, but their manager has led three teams to World Cups, including Colombia, Ecuador, and now Panama. They're extremely aggressive and would be an odds-on favorite for me to pick up a red card versus Belgium or Raheem Sterling. They are definitely going to get a penalty kick called. You can take that to whatever bookie you want, Ladbrokes, whoever it is. Take it there because Raheem Sterling is getting brought down by the Panama defense at some point. They're extremely aggressive, and it's one of those things that the coach believes in. All his teams are like that, Gomez. And I think the Baton himself has said that he's happy just ahead of his team to experience the World Cup. And if you go in with that expectation, that sounds like a really good way to lose every game by four goals, especially when you're playing against Belgium and maybe against our England squad. They'll be lucky to score a goal, and a lot of time their formation looks like a 9-0-1, so they won't be the most fun to watch, but they're going to be hacking people all over the place, and hopefully England will escape from that without getting injured. They have no history at the World Cup, and their historic player honestly is the same. It's none. They don't really have a historic player that sticks out. Roman Torres, a center back from the Sounders, has an opportunity to be that, but he's really going to have to be on his game for them to even get a point. They're 1,000-1, and they are some of the longest shots. I think Saudi Arabia is longer, depending on which bookie you go to. But Panama, not a team looking to get through. Another team in this group that's very similar is Tunisia. Winners of African Group A over Democratic Republic of the Congo, Libya and Guinea. That's a pretty weak group, and they didn't lose in any of these matches, but they only had a +7 goal differential against squads like Libya and Guinea. I mean, that's not impressive. Although, once again, the FIFA ranking in the world is 14, which is one above England, and it doesn't make any sense to me at all. You have these teams like Switzerland 6, they're not. The FIFA rankings don't take into account who they're playing against. So how on earth could England be ranked lower than Tunisia? Well, we're going to find out because they get to actually play each other. Tunisia is managed by Nabil Malou. That's the best I can do with that. The best player is Youssef M'Sakni. And, of course, just like every other best player from slightly obscure nations, he's been compared to Messi. Which kind of Messi, we don't know. We don't know if it's the tall Zlatan Ibrahimovic Messi. We don't know if it's the short Argentinian Messi or maybe the Croatian Messi, but he's been compared to Messi. He plays for Al Dohal in Qatar, and he's injured and out for the tournament. So their best player, who we watched a lot of video on him, he's very dynamic, and he's a player that actually plays at a higher speed than the players around him, which is a testament to how good he is. But like I said, he's not playing in their World Cup, so their odds actually dropped again when he was injured, and I think he has ACL damage and MCL damage. The narrative for them, the Eagles of Carthage, pretty sweet nickname, all things considered, qualified through a weak African Group A, but this group is not, it does not fit their style. They're in a tough group with Belgium and England, and honestly, they would really, to get out of the group, they would really have to take advantage of one of those two teams falling apart at the seams, which, you know, it is England, but Ken and I believe that England will be able to dispatch Tunisia, Belgium will be able to dispatch Tunisia, and I think you'll see Tunisia and Panama battling it out for two of the worst to just get a goal, either one of them. Tunisia will be favored in that regard because they do play an attacking style with a 4-2-3-1, which may heavily backfire, especially against Belgium, who can hit you with Hazard on the attack. I would imagine that Belgium could put up 4 or 5 goals against Tunisia, whereas I would expect England to maybe win 2-0 and be more conservative. Belgium have the ability and the speed to really take apart Tunisia. The matchup's really bad there. Tunisia, their chance of winning, like we said, would be to play against Panama. That'll be the match to watch for those two nations, because I don't think there's going to be much joy playing England or Belgium. Their history, they've qualified for 5 out of 21 World Cups, which is kind of impressive. You see a lot of African teams that are inconsistent. And Tunisia, for the size nation that they are and their location, it's, you know, it's saying something that they have qualified 5 times. And they've only won 1 match in World Cup history. That was in 1978 when they beat our rivals, Mexico, 3-1. Repeat, Mexico lost to Tunisia 3-1 in 1978. I take some joy out of that. Their historic player is Issam Jamah. He had 36 goals in 83 matches, which is not bad at all. Not a bad return. We already said, you know, England's top scorer for the longest time until Wayne Rooney came along was Bobby Charlton with 49 goals in 100 matches. I mean, obviously that's a better return, but when you play for a tiny nation like Tunisia, to score 36 goals in 83 matches it's impressive for sure. So we wrap up the group with our England team. Our goal for this group was to convince all of you English, there are so many of you listening and we appreciate it, that your England team has an opportunity to not only get through, but be the dark horse with this young team that maybe doesn't know any better. With your, I mean, you see interviews with Dele Alli and Jesse Lingard, and sure, Raheem Sterling's taking a beating in the media right now, but you don't get that kind of defeatist attitude out of those guys. Even Sterling, I mean, his confidence should be through the roof after the season that he had with Manchester City, the big goals that he scored. Kane has been the most consistent number 9 in the world for the last 2 or 3 years. I do put him up there with Lewandowski. I do put him up there with Suarez. And I do think that he's a player that can score out of nothing and can be an English hero. Their back line worries me a little bit, but at the same time, I think Pickford on his day can keep a team in a game. And you don't have that kind of huge question mark like you have in previous years. David James, for instance, Rob Green, even Joe Hart, at his peak, he could be calamitous. So I feel confident about this English team. And you have Ken, you have Tom, you have Pete, you don't have James, but you have the three of us, and we are rooting for England. We'll all be going berserk for every Harry Kane goal, for every Raheem Sterling drawn penalty, for Jesse Lingard breaking through and smashing home a 94th minute winner. You have the Three Beards World Cup podcast, and we are with you guys. For Ken Lee, I am Tom Miller saying we hope everybody has an awesome week. We will be back in about 2 or 3 days to do the very last group preview. We will also be back when the games start the first day and then about every other day through the group stages, and then we'll space them out a little bit more. There's a decent chance that one or all of us will be fired during the World Cup, but honestly, it's probably worth it. It's probably worth it. I hope everybody has an awesome week, and let's get ready for the World Cup. Go England!